Law Focus Podcast. Law Focus, handing you your rights.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Law Focus. My name is Melissa Ntindiweni and I'm going with...
My name is Tsepo Mohapi, attorney.
And together, we will be your voice of law for the evening right here on Vibe M 88.1. Are you convinced that South Africa is a religious state or not?
Yeah, we're interesting to question. Are we secular or aren't we secular?
I mean, if you're a religious person, you probably feel that for moral fiber to be part and parcel of our state would really help the, you know, the state of the states, you know, that there won't be any corruption, that there will be ethics. Yeah. Of course, you don't have to be a religious person in order for you to be an ethical person.
Yeah.
But it's a nice bone of contention to have an argument about.
Yeah.
But if you are agnostic or more so atheist, actually, you would probably feel that religion and states should never ever mix. You know, the idea of religion probably just makes you sick to your stomach anyway. You know, and Karl Marx, the great 19th century philosopher, said that religion is the opiate of the masses. And you would probably definitely agree with that notion. So
religion is the opiate of the masses. Well, if you are religious, then a lot of your moral and ethical sort of cornerstones are based on your religion. But of course, if you're not religious, you might base them from something else. It's a very important question in light of the events of the inauguration over the weekend and the swearing-in this week. Yeah. Now, to help us understand the nature of our state and the role that religion can play in our state, as well as how far Section 16 or Section 15 of our Constitution is allowed to stretch, we have invited a constitutional law expert, Pierre de Force, and he has written quite a bit and has spoken quite a bit on constitutional matters, and we want him to give us some analysis into the legal and sort of jurisprudence and the ethics of the church and state. As well as a media commentator will look into it as well, and he's Gershwell Brooks. So you really don't want to miss the discussion today.
It is relevant,
and it's very, very topical.
And of course, you do know that you can join the conversation by tweeting us on @VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. Alternatively, you may send us a voice note on WhatsApp, and the number to dial is 084-078-4912. But of course, before we get into this topical discussion for the evening, we have to first delve into the biggest and hottest legal stories of the week. Here are our legal hotspots.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. It's legal hotspots.
So towards the end of 2018, the South African Bar Association, which is a forum for advocates, kind of had a little split whereby they decided that they're going to have a new association that will be instituted called the Pan-African Bar Association of South Africa, and it would be mainly representative of black and female advocates.
Yeah.
Which I think is important because transformation within the legal fraternity is very slow.
It goes at a snail's pace. The legal profession is undergoing, overall, it's undergoing some real changes in the way it's regulated, and the admission of attorneys and advocates and the admission requirements have been changed, and also the authorities who regulate them and govern them has also changed. But the legal profession, and I'm a member of it, is unusually slow to change, and that's in almost every aspect. It's more of a reactive.
Yeah.
A lot of attorneys, even if they're maverick attorneys, are very conservative, and that's because we like certainty. But I mean, in terms of transformation and so on, that is problematic, and especially racial transformation in this country. So this, for me, is a very good move, and it's tentative at the moment. We'll see how strongly it or how far it goes, and how quickly it picks up. But I mean, it changes inevitable, and it must happen. It's the only constant that exists in the world.
It's a good progress, yes. A brave one.
And we really do wish them the best.
Absolutely.
And I mean, fully behind it, as a black professional myself, fully behind the initiative. Well, and now let's go to the public protector, who is again in the news. She was in the news last week, quite famously for her report, and now she has
made it again.
Yes, again. That's not a bad thing. And in this she has found against the former Minister of Finance, Mr. Pravin Gordhan, of improper conduct relating to a pension fund payout to former Deputy SARS Commissioner Ivan Pillay. So what the public prosecutor found was that the payout to Mr. Pillay, which was an early retirement, was unlawful in essence. We didn't have the authority to do it. It was outside of the normal bounds of the law and shouldn't have been done. And it has really created some real consternation and divided the country.
Absolutely, because I think there's a lot of complexities. I'm struggling myself to come to terms with the proper real arguments on both sides of the case. A lot of people might feel this time she actually has a point, because a lot of people aren't able to actually have an early retirement fund for reasons that pertain to the fact that you can't afford it, the tax implications, etc. And people are asking what is so special about Pillay, which on the other hand, Pravin had actually tried to find legal grounds to be able to actually apply for Pillay's early retirement. And at the time, maybe the administrative decision was wrong, but at the time he was given the go-ahead when he actually decided to institute the action, which today the public protector is saying, but of course it's not even the only case that is against Minister Gordhan, you know. The public protector has also spoken about the rogue units. It's something else that's still pending for him. And so a lot of people are saying this is a political ploy so that he's not part of cabinet.
Well, you know, I mean, the public protector must do her job. If she receives a complaint, she needs to investigate that complaint, particularly if it's a serious complaint such as this one. And whether people agree with her or not, the report is binding until it's reviewed by a court of law. Yeah. You know, in the context of the last couple of reports, big reports, which were not accepted, you know, the Reserve Bank one, as well as the Estimeni issue, a lot of people are questioning her competence. But as it stands now, it's binding. Mr. Gordhan, if he has a problem with it, can take it on review.
Which he has. And then in our final story for this week, so last year there was a man who went on holiday. He was in Greece. He was having fun. And he took a video. And in that video, he was very brave.
Yeah,
and you could only see white. And he basically said, there are no, use the K word, insides, which is basically awesome for him.
Brilliant.
I don't know why he lives in South Africa. He can just move.
One has to wonder. I mean, even if he was born in South Africa.
And no, the thing is,
nothing keeps a person here if they don't want to be here.
Exactly. Yeah. He's obviously got the money to leave, so he can as well.
I happened to be at court today, at the same court as Mr. Katsavelos.
Mm, did you not get infected with some disease?
No, don't worry. I made sure that I washed my hands with Dettol after having seen him. But it was interesting to see how timid he was. He covered his face with paper, and he rushed to his car from the court. It was almost comical, which was in complete contrast to the arrogance that one saw during
the
video. And I believe that his defense is partly based on jurisdiction, where he will in all probability dispute that South African court has jurisdiction over the matter.
I don't know, but like, I feel like if you're racist or if you're sexist or whatever it is, the ist that you are, it follows you. It's part of your identity, yes. You know. So the jurisdiction matter for me, it's a bit like, but even if he was overseas, the fact that he made these comments about specific people who are here in our home should be enough reason for us to be able to implicate him. He needs to go and join his friend in jail.
Yeah, let's hope he doesn't hurt himself in that stretch.
You are tuned into Law Focus on Bow FM 88.1.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. It's Legal Hotspots. Listening to Law Focus? Connect with Bow FM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
Section 15 of our Constitution certainly allows you to openly follow a faith if you so choose. You can even evangelize if you so wish. Just this past week, we had the first sitting of the 6th Parliamentary Assembly, where we saw the National Assembly and the NCOP being constituted. And on both occasions, there were prayers by religious leaders of different faiths. Not only that, but the Chief Justice expressed his religious sentiments publicly whilst carrying out his state functions by praying in the National Assembly. And during the inauguration of the President, he gave Mr. Ramaphosa a Bible. I'm interested to know how you feel about this. Perhaps we are just being disingenuous by having this conversation after the Chief Justice's religious affirmation, but to help us navigate our thoughts and feelings around this topic is none other than South African constitutional law scholar Pierre de Force, who joins us now on the line. Mr. Pierre de Force, welcome to Law Focus.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Let's begin by perhaps you briefly giving us the role and duties of what a constitutional law chief justice actually is.
Well, in terms of the constitution, the chief justice heads up the judiciary. So he's in control really of the judiciary. So that's the administrative role. He's then also, because of that, he chairs the Judicial Service Commission, which is the body that selects judges at the point and decide on the appointment of judges. And the other very important role is, of course, he's one of the 11 judges that actually sits on the Constitutional Court, hear cases, and make judgments about constitutional and other matters as the highest court of the country.
Mm. In the operation of your work as a civil servant, whether you're a teacher or a nurse, a judge, whatever it is that you are, a police officer, are you ever allowed to bring your personal religious beliefs to the fore?
Well, if you are working within a state-aided institution, so if you're the Department of Home Affairs or you a teacher or whatever that might be, then it is possible to have religious observance of some kind, so to pray, to read the Bible or the Quran or whatever, but only if that is done in terms of rules that were made beforehand. If the conduct is treating religion and beliefs on an equitable basis, so there must be some fairness. And thirdly, it has to be voluntary. So it is not really possible, for example, at a graduation ceremony, inauguration or whatever, to have religious observance of some kind, because it will not be voluntary. It will be sort of jumped on people, and that will not be allowed. That is different from announcing beforehand this is going to happen, and it's not one of those important things that you're really forced to go, and you may have a choice, either attend or not attend. So say at school there could be observance on Friday mornings at the gathering, and the students, the learners who don't want to do that can be given another option to go and sit and paint or sing songs or whatever the case may be.
So meaning that we can actually make a comparison in law between the use of religion in schools, especially like public schools, and the use of religion within the state, be it the judiciary, the legislature, or the executive, by you saying that as long as firstly it has been said beforehand that we will do this, and secondly, it should be voluntary. It's not a forced matter that everyone has to sit in throughout the proceedings.
Yes, that is correct. So it's very important that it must be voluntary, because at the very heart of freedom of religion, but of course the Constitution doesn't only protect that, also freedom of conscience, the freedom not to believe, But at the heart of that, there is a need to accommodate different groups and not to enforce your beliefs on somebody else. And so that's at the heart of the matter. Of course, sometimes that will be very difficult or even impossible, because your right to have your beliefs, either religious or otherwise, might clash with very other important rights. For example, your right not to be discriminated against. If there's a church that believes that one racial group is superior to another, and you want to proselytize on that, the law might well tell you, no, you're not allowed to do that because that is racist or sexist or whatever, and then your right to freedom of religion might be limited.
Yeah. I mean, we also know that Section 15 of our Constitution is the clause that essentially legitimates our right to whatever religion or to not follow a religion, as you rightly said, a belief or a conscience. But how does this apply to the state and the functions of and within the state?
Okay, so we have a system in which we say, as I said before, where we have trying and accommodate differences, and the state can also try and accommodate the differences by not choosing one belief or religion above another, because the court has also said there are ways in which the state can behave, or members who forms part of the state can behave, that's going to send a subtle signal that the state's power, prestige, and so on is behind that particular religion. And that would not be good, because that will basically force people or make people feel afraid to have a different view. That cannot happen. But as long as it's voluntary, there can be some accommodation of different beliefs, and of course everybody has every right in other private settings to do whatever they want to. If you're at home, or if in your church or your synagogue or whatever, you can believe and say whatever you want to, but not if you are an agent of the state. So if you're a doctor in a state hospital, you cannot say, well, my religion tells me I'm not going to treat gay men and lesbians. That will not be permitted. If you believe that at home or in your church, that is a different matter.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you said so much crucial things, but now with regards to the recent actions that we saw by Constitutional Court Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng, where he invited members of parliament to participate in his prayer, for instance, and perhaps even his giving of the Bible as a gift to the president at the inauguration, were those actions in particular legally appropriate?
I didn't see it specifically, so it's a bit difficult for me to comment. I would say this, that when the Chief Justice, of course, is in a special position, because he is, or if it's a sheesh, is not only employed by the state, so to speak, but is also a judge that's going to have to be impartial. And so you have to be careful in public and not to give anybody the feeling or the impression that you are going to prefer some people above others. Whether this happened in the particular case, I don't know. But in Parliament, there might be another problem, and that is, I'm not sure that there was voluntariness, to the extent that it might not have been voluntary, that might be an issue. But that doesn't mean that the Chief Justice is not permitted to have religious beliefs, and even to say so in certain contexts. In an official context, it may be more difficult than in a private context. There's nothing that prohibits the Chief Justice, say, in an interview with the radio station, to say, well, of course, I'm a Christian, I am even a lay preacher. That is perfectly fine. In a formal setting, the question, it becomes more difficult, and whether it's unlawful, I don't know, I'm sitting on the fence on this, but is it inappropriate? Probably.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a bit of a fine line, especially when you speak about how I mean, in Parliament, what he did was whatever religion you belong to, if it's meditation that you all do as your prayer or whatever it is, you can do that. Does that then negate him seeming to be someone who is imposing his views by so doing?
If there is voluntariness and if there is a recognition, perhaps it softens it definitely. If there is a recognition that there is not one religion or one belief system, that there are many, if there is respect for the diversity, for the difference, for the fact that the one religion is not necessarily valued more than another, that would be go a long way to address any concerns one might have had.
Yeah. And also, I mean, in legal practice, such as in courts, when a person swears under oath, often it is expected for them to say, "So help me God." Of course, there might be an option for a declaration instead of that particular oath. But essentially, does this not give a high regard to certain religious beliefs and practices more privilege than others?
That's an interesting question. Our constitution actually is a bit different, say, from the very rigid constitutions in the US, where there's a rigid separation between religion on the one hand and the state on the other. There are even cases from the US Supreme Court that took the city council to court because they put up Christmas lights and they said, "No, you are endorsing the Christian religion here. That's not allowed." And the court ruled that was indeed the case. In South Africa, we don't have that. In the preamble to the constitution, there's a reference to God. In section 15 itself, it says there could be, in those strict circumstances, a recognition of religion. And so that means that we don't have a complete separation between religion and non-religion, but it cannot be in any way coercive or give the impression that the state is preferring one religion above another. And so as long, I think, as you have a choice either to say, "So help you God," or to just swear on the constitution or what other document, that should probably be fine, given that we don't have that absolute separation between the religion and the state that we have in the US.
And that is interesting, because everyone believes that South Africa is a secular state, you know. But perhaps you can also allude to that in your final comments to this question. Is South Africa reflective of its notion of religious diversity generally? And if not, what changes or improvements ought to be made in this regard?
Well, you see, I think at the heart, as I said, of our system is trying to accommodate a difference. And so I think people, especially people who are members of the more dominant religions, people who are Christian and so on, sometimes forget that they you have to have respect in our system for difference and diversity. And so whether somebody is atheist, somebody is Jewish, or somebody is a Muslim, Rastafarian, whatever, one has to accommodate those things. And I think that is a good thing. It says that we know that some people are very religious, that it's very important for them, we want to respect that, but that respect also places a duty on those individuals to respect others who are different from them. It's not a one-way street that only non-religious believers, people must respect religion, but religious believers shouldn't respect atheists or agnostics or whatever. There should be mutual respect
on both
even
sides,
if we don't agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this makes for a very interesting legal jurisprudence argument. And perhaps people like you, scholars like yourself, can continue writing more about this, especially in light of some of the developments that we are seeing in South Africa nowadays.
Yes, so we will see. There's going to be a lot of jurisprudence probably in the near future, also about what happens in schools and also about the clash between religion and the right to equality, especially as far as LGBTI people are concerned. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what the court says.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us right here on Law Focus, Mr. Pierre DeForce, who is a constitutional law expert.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for that. Thank you. And that was a very interesting interview with Mr. DeForce. It's clear that, you know, the question around the separation of church and state isn't really as clear-cut as we might sometimes like it to be. I mean, in practice, we have human beings dealing with human emotions and human experiences. And part of that experience is religion. You know, the mere fact that one occupies a public space doesn't mean that their religion is completely ignored. But I think it's finding that balance between when it is okay, acceptable to infuse your religion into what you're doing, and when it isn't. And from the interview, I think when you're dealing as an agent of the state, and it doesn't matter in what capacity, but as an agent of the state, then your religion should take a back seat and you should perform your duties.
Yeah, absolutely. I also found that part very interesting about the conflation of religion and state. But do stay tuned in. You are listening to Law Focus on Vow FM 88.1.
Law Focus on Vow FM 88.1. Point of information.
So we saw parliamentarians taking up their oaths of office this past week. The National Assembly and the NCOP were once again constituted. And the two options that are there when they do actually make that affirmation for their commitment to actually uphold the rule of law in South Africa, the two options that the Chief Justice was giving are either you say, "So help me God," or you say, "I do."
Correct.
That's number one. Number two, in a court of law in South Africa, when a witness is about to testify, again, there's what seems to be a faith-based kind of practice whereby you put your, is it your right hand on the Bible?
Oh, yes, they no longer have the Bible in court, but in principle, you still raise your right hand.
You still raise your right
and
hand.
And say, "So help me,
so help
God."
Me God.
That's if you take the oath.
That's if you take the oath.
Yes.
Otherwise, you again have a declaration.
Yes, you have an affirmation.
An affirmation.
Yes.
And then then there's the Chief Justice praying recently. I think it was a first where in the National Assembly, he felt that perhaps our ethics in this country have not been so good over the past 10 years or whatever. And so he invited everyone within the National Assembly or the other parliamentarians to join him in his prayer, saying, "Listen, maybe you don't pray by saying, 'Dear Lord, blah, 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 blah.'
Yes.
Maybe you just meditate. Whatever it is that you do, join me in this important occasion. Let us invite the deity, call for divine intervention as a new state and a government is assumed." With all these thoughts, I mean, share your thoughts with us. Should state and religion be separated? Because these are obviously examples of religious interference within the state. So we did ask you this question from your voxies, and this is precisely what you had to say.
Hi, my name is Thabiso Rapapula. I'm studying at Wits University, doing masters in African languages, specifically computational linguistics. I'm 25 years of age this year. So what Chief Justice did in the parliament, I don't see anything wrong there. Whether his prayer, I think it was good. South Africa is a diverse country, yes, of course. But the way in which he was praying, all religions, they do pray at some point. Whether they pray to Allah, they pray to God, they pray to, you know, whatever, the supernatural being. All religions, at the end of the day, they do pray. So prayer, I think it's universal across all the religions in South Africa. So I don't see anything wrong with him praying.
Hi, my name is Neo Samoko. I am in my third year LLB, well, third year doing my LLB degree. My view on the Chief Justice having to pray in Parliament before the opening session, I feel that it's a tradition that has always been observed, because we do know that in every sitting of Parliament, there's usually they do usually start with a moment of prayer or reflection. The only difference is that he had to now go down and pray on his knees. So I feel that he is rightfully protected in the Constitution, Section 15 of the Constitution, which protects freedom of religion being practiced. He is not enforcing it on anyone, and it's something that anyone can do at any time. You take the example of the inauguration where they had an interfaith mission. Are we now saying that simply because the Chief Justice was praying at the opening of the 6th Parliament, that the interfaith mission of all those the Muslim, Hindu and Judaism priests that prayed at the inauguration were not meant to have prayed? So I think everyone is entitled to practice their freedom of religion in whatever way they do decide to express it.
I'm doing third year super chem. I think what the judge did was okay, because I mean, he's one person. It doesn't make sense to take a person away from his religion, and he wasn't forcing it on anyone. He was just expressing who he is and what he believes in. And so although it's a secular country, we are allowed to express our whole selves the way we are. So yeah, that's what I think.
My name is Tabang, and I'm doing my third year in LLB. So basically what my opinion is of this is that Chief Justice did actually say that whatever you believe might be, so if you pray, if you meditate, or whatever beliefs you might have, you can practice that, right? But although there was that disclaimer, I feel like there was no need for, we should always strive to separate the church and the state. Yeah, at all costs. So religion from the state at all costs must be separated. But although I understand that he meant no harm by it, and he actually did explain why he was doing it, but preferably we avoid doing that at all costs. Yeah, especially since this is a place where, I mean, South Africa is very, it's a secular state, that's what we say it is, right? So it would be better if we all just be neutral. You can believe or believe in whatever, but then just go pray in the toilet if there's a need, you know, but then don't televise it.
Hello, my name is Hazel Ramutlou. I'm studying nuclear science and engineering, second year at Wits University. Well, I think if you asked the crowd that should we pray in a Christian way, and people agreed that it's fine, you can go on and pray, even if like they're not going to get involved in the praying matter, but he asked and people agreed, then it's fine for him to pray in a Christian way. Although we understand that there is a diversity of people. Maybe while he's busy praying, they could also, you know, perform their own form of prayer. And the issue of, like, religion and state, yeah, I think it should, but it should not specify which kind of, like, religion. Like, we know that people perform religious in a different way. So if they could just say, thank you, Lord, not really specify which Lord, I don't know. Like, maybe to bring peace into the parliament and everything. Because I believe that before you start anything, or when you end any event, like, you should tell, like, the person or whoever you believe in to bring peace into that event.
Those are all very, very, very interesting views, and they are diverse. I mean, some people agreeing and others feeling that it wasn't a prudent move by the Chief Justice. But I mean, that's also exercising some of our freedoms. So to join us today to unpack this a little bit further and to look into the freedom of religion and the interplay that it has with public office, we have Mr. Gershwell Brooks, who's a media commentator. I mean, we are in South Africa, where it's a great diversity of individuals, and it's always good to have a perspective of an individual who perhaps looks at it from a media perspective and from a commentator's perspective. Hello, Mr. Brooks. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners. I think I should just make a couple of disclaimers. Of course, I am the communications coordinator for the South African Human Rights Commission as well.
Yes.
And apart from that, I'm also a WITS alumnus, the law school more specifically. And yeah, I mean, it's very interesting, the commentary coming through. And to be honest with you, the first third year law student that spoke, you know, the series of voice notes that you played.
Yes.
In my opinion, you know, it shows that the WITS Law School still has high standards, because I think he hit the nail on the head in that particular instance.
Okay. No, that's good. That's interesting. I mean, a lot of people have all sorts of takes on it. But let's unpack this a little bit. Let's start by asking you know, we always work on the presumption that there is such a thing as a secular state, but let's perhaps go a little bit back and ask, what is a secular state? Is South Africa a secular state? And can there ever actually in practice be such a thing as a secular state?
Yes, indeed. And I think South Africa is probably the perfect example of a secular state. And I'm speaking from the perspective that despite being a secular state. So a secular state is a country that does not, its laws, its policies, and its systems is not based on a religious bias. So an example of a country that wouldn't be, or state, that wouldn't be secular, but rather, for argument's sake, a theocracy, would be, for example, Vatican City, or the Vatican State, where obviously the head of state is the Pope. The laws and the systems are based on that of the Catholic Church. Or alternatively, another example of a theocracy would be, say, Saudi Arabia, where you have a version of Sharia law that's implemented. And in other words, that law is informed by Quranic laws and principles. So in other words, it is a state that is then governed from the perspective of a particular religious bias and a particular religious view.
Yes.
South Africa is not that type of a state. It's a secular state, which means that no particular religion informs the policies or the laws of the state, and you can't use religion as a basis of creating certain laws and policies.
Yes.
But I think it is also important to then highlight the fact that despite being a secular state, South Africa is a state that does recognize and constitutionally protect, and that's why I said that first speaker, as a third-year law student, hit the nail on the head by pointing out that Section 15 of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, does actually protect your right to freedom of religion, belief, and opinion. In as much as we're saying that the law of the land and the policies of the land shouldn't be informed by religion, we give individuals and groups the right and the opportunity to believe in whatever they choose to believe in.
That's an interesting take on it, because I don't know if I mentioned before, I'm an attorney myself, and I have a slightly different view of it, that you can never have a secular state. And the reason I say that is, for instance, in South Africa, although our policies perhaps aren't directly informed by religion props up or crops up in everyday governance and in our lives. For instance, every Sunday the whole country is off because it's the Christian Sabbath. If we were, for example, Jewish, we'd take it on Saturday. That's one example. Or we make a reference to God in court when we want to make an oath. We consider it binding on our conscience. So, and then we take all of the Christian holidays as public holidays as well. So from my perspective, I've always viewed it that it's very difficult to have a completely secular state. What you can have is perhaps a state that doesn't put religion at the center, but gives a big nod towards the majority religion of its population. What do you think of that?
Well, of course, that is true. There is, as you said, and I think you've correctly framed it by saying that there is a nod to religion. But, for example, we're not imprisoning people for working on a Sunday. So if I decide that I want to go into the office and do some work, or I have a shop and I open my shop on a Sunday, I'm not facing imprisonment because the state says it's the Sabbath, you know, the Christian Sabbath. Hmm. Alternatively, if I open my shop or I do some form of work on a Saturday, then I'm facing imprisonment because it's the Jewish Sabbath. Or if I do work on a Friday at 12:30, when Muslims obviously observe their holy day, you know, by going to mosque at that particular point in time, I'm also not under threat of, I don't know, facing some criminal sanction or being arrested.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
So I do think that, you know, and I think also in terms of broader policy, I mean, you use the example of the courts, and it's an example in this discussion, in this debate that's happened elsewhere, where people make reference to the fact that, yeah, but if I go to court, then I take an oath and I put my hand on the Bible. The law clearly states that you can take an affirmation if you don't want to take an oath.
Yes,
or alternatively,
correct.
That if you so wish, that you can take your oath based on your particular religious background. So, in essence, you'd say the same thing, but instead of placing your hand on the Bible, you would put it on whatever religious text you see fit.
Yes, yes.
Assuming that your religion supports the notion of an oath.
Yes.
In the first place.
In fact, the Bible itself has been removed from the equation. You simply take the oath nowadays without a religious book.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, okay, let's move to the Chief Justice and his position. Now, you know, the office of the Chief Justice is an extremely important one.
Sure.
It's from an administrative point of view, it's the judiciary ensures that the judiciary has got certain standards that it must adhere to in terms of its office bearers and its functioning. But from even an ideological perspective, one could say that one of the primary jobs is to protect the Constitution and ensure that the laws and the policies implemented by the state are in line with our Constitution. And our Chief Justice is famously quite a religious individual,
sure.
Which no one really has a problem. Many people in South Africa are religious, but he prayed at the inauguration or swearing in, I believe. And it has caused some discussions with people having somewhat extreme views. Is your take on it that he overstepped the mark, or are we having a storm in a teacup here?
I think it is a major storm in a teacup, and I think that we are definitely, that the Chief Justice definitely did not overstep the mark whatsoever. And I think we need to also frame this conversation within the fact that the Chief Justice and many other office bearers, whether they head up Chapter 9 institutions, the judiciary, or, you know, any other arm of the state, they are human beings, and that they are actually holistic human beings that are made up of very many portions.
Mm.
As you know, we just came out of our national elections on the 8th of May, so my assumption is that the Chief Justice probably voted for a particular political party. At the very same time, as we agree, the Chief Justice is a man of religion, so my assumption is that he's quite a regular attendant at church on a Sunday.
Yes, I believe he's a lay minister, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. So on that basis, we can't remove those aspects of his life. I mean, he has children, he has a wife, or at least a spouse. So in other words, all of those things make a holistic human being that obviously frames you in anything and everything that you do. What the Chief Justice, I would be concerned, and I think that everyone else in South Africa should be concerned, the day the Chief Justice, for example, bases his decision on Bible scripture rather than the Constitution. And that has not happened, at least not as the Chief Justice of the Constitution. He's always referred back to the Constitution. He's always referred back to case law, supporting legislation, and even international law. But I'm pretty sure that, no matter how much research you do on this, you won't find that the Chief Justice was informed by Scripture.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's why I think that we shouldn't be too concerned.
Too concerned about
now, it. As for his prayer at the swearing-in of the parliamentarians, the members of Parliament, the issue is he did it individually. He took a private moment, knelt down, and prayed silently to himself.
All right. Gershwin, could I just interrupt you just for a second? I think I need to take a quick ad break, but I'd like you to continue because this is a very, very, very important part of what I think you need to explain to us here.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Hi, and welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm just going back to the private moment that the Chief Justice took, sure. I think, yeah, you were explaining to that to us. And if you could just expand on that, because I think that's a very important thing that you've, even though the private moment was televised, I mean, but I mean, you're phrasing it as a private moment, and let's unpack that a bit.
Yeah, so as I was saying, he privately, and when I mean privately, of course, we understand that that's why we see the photos and we saw the broadcast of it. He privately, him as an individual, knelt down, took a moment to pray, and then obviously went ahead and performed his functions.
Yes.
Now, the issue is that that private moment of prayer was obviously broadcast and televised, and it was made public from that perspective. However, the reason why I personally don't take umbrage with it, and I don't think as a nation we have to take umbrage to it, is because he didn't get up and say to all of those people gathered there as parliamentarians or, you know, people sitting in the gallery, that please join me in prayer and follow my prayer principles. He exercised his right under Section 15 very fairly by praying and you know, performing that particular act. And he could have prayed for all kinds of reasons, seeking some form of, you know, guidance from a higher power, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's for him and you know, his higher power that he believes in.
Yes.
That's the first issue. The second issue is also that I think that apart from that, we also need to understand that we have enough legislation and court cases that tell us that you can, in public spaces, you know, perform religious ceremonies, yes, provided it's not to the exclusion of others.
Yes.
Now, we can't argue that the Chief Justice excluded other people because he did not publicly pray for the entire people gathered in Parliament and then force them to the exclusion of other religions, say, for example, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, or any other form of religion you can imagine, and say that you have to pray the way I pray, and you have to pray to the God that I am praying to. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, the option of opting out of that thing was in essence there at all times. If you didn't want to participate, or if you wanted to participate in your own way, that was also available to you. Is that, I mean,
yeah,
that's what you're saying?
Yeah, fair enough. But, I mean, even so, I don't even think that matters in this instance, because it wasn't a public thing where he asked for support or for people to join in.
Okay.
He prayed by himself. It wasn't something that he included others in. He didn't ask other people to help him or to join him or to adhere to what he was doing. He took that moment and he prayed as an individual. So what I'm saying is he exercised his right under Section 15. He did not impose it on others to the exclusion of other religions. It was his private moment, and therefore he is well able to do that. And I think that, again, go back to my original statement on this, is that the Chief Justice, like any other human being, is a holistic person, and he has religious views, and I don't think we have to be concerned unless the Chief Justice or any other official in that position, within the judiciary as an example, starts using their religious bias and start making certain decisions on that basis.
No.
So if the Chief Justice is a Christian, decided that he is going to overturn the law on, say, for example, the termination of pregnancy because it's opposed to his religious principles, that is of deep concern.
Yes, okay.
But
no,
even if it clashes with his religious morality or beliefs, and there's a constitutional principle that is protected under law and the Constitution, then he needs to adhere to it, and that is exactly what he has done for the number of years that he has been serving the Constitutional Court. So therefore, as a nation, we don't have to be concerned.
Yes, yeah, okay, and we hope that it can, of course, remain that way. I suppose one of the fears by individuals is that if we open the door even slightly to religion, is that we may not have someone quite as benevolent as the current Chief Justice, or a person of authority who's not quite as open-minded. I suppose that's a valid concern. But moving to...
Just as a final point, if I can just raise one last point on what you just said. I think we also need to very, very much respect the position of Chief Justice.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a willy-nilly appointment. It's not someone that's just chosen because they've served many, many years in the judiciary and probably made very many bad decisions. It is someone that has to demonstrate a track record of upholding the Constitution under all circumstances. So yeah. And apart from it, I think the other thing that we also should never forget is that the Chief Justice does not act alone and within a vacuum within the Constitutional Court. If you go through the history of the Constitutional Court, the Chief Justice has one vote like any other judge sitting or any other justice sitting on the Constitutional Court and has been overruled many a times by his colleagues and his contemporaries. And in fact, the only time that he has a role to play at all, if any, that is probably more significant than that of his other colleagues in the Constitutional Court, is that he ensures that there is, in fact, a majority judgment. So in other words, he's the swing vote.
Yeah.
But that swing vote cannot possibly be determined by political leanings or religious leanings or anything that would be subjective to that individual and problematic.
Right. So the last question perhaps that I have for you is your initial answer to our question was that you believe South Africa is a secular state. And
yes.
How would and should religious diversity, what should it look like in a secular state? And do you think our country is a good reflection of that?
Well, I think that our country is a wonderful reflection of that, of religious diversity. I mean, that they, I go back to the point that you raised about, you know, the observance of Christian holidays. I mean, we can take a step in the right direction and obviously ensure that all companies, businesses, departments, the very university that you're studying at and that, you know, many of your peers are studying at, adheres to the fact that if it is, for example, Diwali, the 2 days of Diwali, that is maybe a day that's observed, and all students are given that day off, just as they would be on a Good Friday or yes. Christmas.
As the law stands at the moment, it's only the adherents of that religion who are given the day off.
And I think it's also the subject of an ongoing debate.
I mean, every
single year when it's Christmas, I mean, because of other spaces, I find myself in, specifically in the media, specifically in the public debate space. It's something that comes up every single year. Why is it that Christmas is still a public holiday? And I don't think that we've made a concerted effort, I think, as South Africans to review, for example, our calendar of public holidays and to sit down and to say that, listen, we have to give equal observance to Hanukkah, to Eid, to Diwali, and any other day that is holy and significant to a particular religious group.
Yeah.
But then obviously you get into a debate about what percentage do those people constitute. You know.
And the cost to the economy and things like that, I suppose, as well.
So, I'm afraid?
The cost of the economy, etc., having a
exactly,
public holiday.
For me, what the important bit is that if I'm running a business, an enterprise, and I have 10 people who are employed, and 7 of them get the day off on Christmas, and everyone else obviously get the day off on Christmas because it's actually a public holiday. And so, too, it's incumbent on me to ensure that, for example, if I have a Jewish person in my team, that I give that person a day off without deducting, say, annual leave for their observance.
Yeah.
And for example, at the South African Human Rights Commission, which I think is extremely innovative, we have what we call a cultural day. So in other words, which is given to all staff, which means that whatever my cultural leanings are or religious leanings are, if it is a day of religious significance, it's a day that I can take off without impacting on, say, for example, my annual leave.
Okay.
And I think that if more companies and more industries, more departments can start emulating something similar, then I think that would be a reasonable accommodation for people, especially on the basis of religion.
Yes.
But I think that religious tolerance and the right to freedom of religion, belief, and opinion should extend beyond simple token days off. I mean, it should actually extend to how we interact with each other. Do I actually accept, understand, and interact with people of other faiths? So in other words, do I understand that my friend who is Muslim, when he or she comes over to my house, has specific catering needs, and I don't make fun of the fact that they might not want to have, the pizza with bacon on it. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, no, I understand that.
You know, are we respectful of those things? Are we respectful of the fact that my Christian friend might not want to have a drink. Those are the important things that we need to start focusing on.
Yes. I suppose as we go as a democracy, these are the questions that we all have to grapple with. But thank you very much for engaging with us today. And your views have been very, very interesting. And I think we can go on and on about this topic. But, I mean, our time is limited. Thank you very thank you very much, Mr. Brooks.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Bye.
I guess the child was there also trying to say, Daddy. But I think what we can pick up from both interviews that we had this evening is basically that voluntariness is important in a secular state, which is something that both our guests alluded to as having in South Africa. As long as people are not forced, no punitive measures are put in place for exercising or not exercising your religion, then we are okay. And for as long as legal decisions by the Chief Justice are made based on the Constitution and not on any particular religion, you know, for as long as we don't have that problem, we are actually okay. Fairness by not electing any one religion should be what matters in a secular state.
Ultimately, we're a constitutional democracy. And everybody has the right to exercise their freedom of religion, including the Chief Justice. We have to remember that the office of the Chief Justice and any other office, serious office bearer in our country, is always quite a considered decision. We do not elect them or appoint them summarily or arbitrarily, and that should always be kept in mind. So if an individual exercises their right to freedom of religion publicly, I don't think it's cause for concern, particularly when we have so many institutions and so many laws and customs which encourage the respectfulness and tolerance of other religions. So tonight we have had a wonderful discussion, and I'd like to thank our producers and our technical producer, Kutlwana Sarame, Simba Honde, as well as Nelka. And for myself and Millicent, good night.
Good night.
Law Focus. Point of information. Law Focus Podcast.